a psychological milestone.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Bill Radke. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has not been below 7,000 in this century until now. The Dow stands at 6,958, down 104 points, about 1.5%. Remember, it was above 14,000 just a year and a half ago. The NASDAQ is off 10 points, or 0.7%. The S&P 500 is down 12 points, or 1.6%. European shares are down about 3% at this hour. Britain's FTSE index is at 2003 levels. Asian markets sank 4% today. This morning, insurance giant AIG broke the record for biggest quarterly loss in history. AIG lost $61.7 billion in the fourth quarter. In response, the U.S. government will bail out AIG for the fourth time. This latest rescue is different from the first few tries, as Marketplace's Dan Gretsch tells us.
The first three bailouts of AIG were aimed at helping the insurance giant weather the economic downturn. This latest bailout seems to set the stage for a breakup of the 90-year-old firm. The new rescue plan provides an additional $30 billion in loans. It also cancels out a portion of the loans AIG received last year. In exchange, the government gets preferred shares that pay a dividend, and the government takes control of two AIG units that sell life insurance overseas, which the government can later sell. A Treasury official said this morning AIG's roots in the global economy are so broad and deep, its collapse would spell disaster. Hugh Johnson is with Johnson Illington Advisors, a money management firm.
Is it crystal clear that that would be the outcome? No. You don't want to test it, though.
With the latest bailout of AIG, U.S. taxpayers are now on the hook for $163 billion. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
Some of the billions that the federal government is spending on AIG are coming from the TARP, the Troubled Assets Relief Program. The TARP is often called a bank bailout, but when the Bush administration announced the package, it encouraged insurance companies to apply. Frank Keating is president of the American Council of Life Insurers. Frank, some insurance companies not named AIG did apply for the money and are still waiting. What is going on?
Well, that's the imponderable. That's the big question mark, because last fall, the Congress specifically put the insurance industry in the bill, and we had a series of meetings at Treasury, and the problem was, well, since you're state regulated, I wanted it to happen, Secretary Paulson said, but I wonder how we're going to do this. And we pretty well agreed that if they bought thrifts or banks, the federal government would understand what they're all about. So out of some thousand life insurance companies, 13 applied. One withdrew its application, but since then it has been silent, which is certainly troubling to us because we've invested in some cases heavily into the thrift business in order to be entitled to be considered, and the phones do not get answered.
You know that critics say that $700 billion bailout package was meant to save the banking system, not life or property insurers. Why should you get the money?
Well, the life insurance industry, the banks are $15 trillion, the mutual funds, $10 trillion, the life insurance industry, $5 trillion. We have $2 trillion in long-term bonds. Most of our investments are 20 years plus. The industry is hugely significant to the progress and the success of the financial economy, and the Congress saw that. The Treasury Department, quite truthfully, saw that as well. But because we are state regulated, it's out of sight, out of mind, and we think that's distressing.
If life insurers are shut out of that rescue money, what's the impact on policyholders?
Well, no impact on policyholders, because the reserves, the capital, are there to satisfy policyholder claims. That's not the problem. The problem is we want to go out and buy bonds. We want to go out and get active in the marketplace as we traditionally are, greasing this financial marketplace skid, making sure that we're in a position to continue to buy trillions of dollars of bonds. And more capital means more commercial activity, more purchase activity, more lending activity. That's good for the entire economy.
Frank Keating is president of the American Council of Life Insurers. Frank, thank you.
You're welcome, Bill. Thank you.
Consumer spending bounced back a little in January, 0.6%. Economists say don't expect that little spending bump to last. Personal incomes rose 0.4%. Part of that was Social Security cost of living adjustments. And our personal savings rate, now that was up at 5% now, highest it's been since the mid-90s. You're listening to The Morning Report for Monday, March 2nd at Marketplace.org. European Union leaders met over the weekend to work out their unified approach to the financial fallout. Marketplace's European correspondent Stephen Beard joins us. Stephen, I understand the summit veered off script.
Yes, an old fault line apparently opened up. The old divisions between East and Western Europe surfaced quite painfully at this summit. This, I would say, is probably the worst split since the two sides of Europe were unified after the collapse of communism almost 20 years ago. Most of the former communist countries of Eastern Europe, countries like Poland, Hungary, the Czech Republic, are now members of the European Union. But it's pretty clear from this summit that many of them feel West Europeans are not helping them out in this crisis. The Hungarians feel that in particular.
What's with the Iron Curtain comment?
Well, this is what the Hungarians say is going to happen unless they get more help from the West. What Hungary asked for at this summit was an EU bailout fund for the East worth about $240 billion to help out these countries of Eastern Europe that are far worse hit than their West European counterparts by this crisis. Germany, which would pick up the largest part of the bill for this, said, no, we'll do it on a country-by-country basis.
I think Americans are peering over there saying, where is the European unity?
Well, there's a lot of disunity, I'm afraid. And it's not just the Hungarians. I mean, the Poles, Poland is the superpower, if you like, of Eastern Europe. They're pretty upset, too. They feel they've been excluded by Westerners. They held a mini-summit at the weekend just before the main summit. But the Hungarians, have been really the most apocalyptic. I mean, they've been talking about social unrest in the East if they don't get more help, mass unemployment, mass migration, and the prospect of this new Iron Curtain rattling down across the continent, this time designed to keep the Easterners out of the West.
Okay, Stephen, so this is a European battle. What are the wider implications of this?
This summit, this EU summit in Brussels this weekend, was designed to pull the Europeans together, to get them all on board, to get them unified in preparation for the really big summit in London next month, the summit of the Group of 20 countries. Clearly, if the Europeans are bickering, the prospect of a unified result from that G20 summit in London looked pretty remote.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard, thank you.
Okay, Bill.
The economy will get worse before it gets better. That is the consensus among leading economic experts as they kick off a 3-day conference outside Washington, D.C. this morning. As our senior business correspondent Bob Moon tells us, these economists admit they are still trying to figure out exactly where the economy is headed.
Gather a group of top economists in a room, and what do you get? No dismal punchlines, please. These days you'll find a bunch of weary and fractured forecasters.
I've just never seen things fall apart, not just in the U.S., but around the world so quickly.
David Weiss is chief economist at Standard & Poor's. He says the fairly mild to moderate recession many economists were predicting as recently as a few months ago has taken a sudden, sharp turn for the worse. In fact, things are moving so fast it almost has to suffice to say it's bad.
I think any business right now knows that the economy is very uncertain, and the point estimates from the economists are not worth a heck of a lot. What is important is to understand what the degree of risk is, and that's obviously increased sharply.
Weiss is somewhat less optimistic than his counterparts attending the conference of the National Association for Business Economics. While the group's latest survey points to 3% growth next year, he sees just 2%.
Some of us are really gloomy and some of us are mildly gloomy. The good news is we may see relatively good alcohol sales at the meetings.
Still, the group's survey found at least some hope a recovery could start by late this year. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Foreign-born techies make the startup world go round. 52% of the top execs at Silicon Valley startups are immigrants. And a new study finds some of the most brilliant high-tech minds are heading back home. Janet Babin reports from the Marketplace Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio.
To many immigrants, the U.S. is the shiny gold ring, the reward after years of hard work. A high-tech job here is the pinnacle of success. But a new study finds that ring has begun to tarnish. Duke professor and Harvard researcher Vivek Wadha was one of the paper's authors. He sampled more than 1,000 immigrant PhDs working in the U.S. Less than 15% reported that they wanted to stay here. Wadha says the innovation that fuels the American economy will now move offshore.
The next Silicon Valley won't be in RTP or it won't be in California. It's going to be in Shanghai or it's going to be in Bangalore.
That's because home cities like Bangalore now provide better opportunities than immigrants can get in the U.S. To contain the exodus, Wadha says the U.S. should ease visa restrictions to make it easier for immigrants to stay here. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
A group called Capital Climate Action is planning an environmental rally today in Washington, D.C. The target is an old coal-fired power plant just south of Washington. It provides electricity to Capitol Hill. Ronnie Radbill has our story.
The coalition is bringing out a heavy hitter to bolster its cause, running an ad on YouTube with actress Susan Sarandon.
The American people will take a stand at Congress's own coal-fired power plant. A glaring symbol of coal's hold over our government.
Some congressional Democrats want the Capitol power plant to switch from coal to natural gas in an effort to cut carbon emissions. But with the right technology, Joe Lucas with Clean Coal Electricity says coal can be an environmentally friendly option.
It will be necessary for us to have these technologies if we are to achieve our goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions on a global scale.
It remains to be seen just how tough the White House will be when it comes to coal. But under the new administration, the Environmental Protection Agency recently halted approval of a coal plant in South Dakota. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
We haven't had much good news to report lately about housing. Sales are down, prices down, and builders can't get bank loans to put up new homes. But there is one part of the housing construction market that's doing well. That is green home remodeling. Rob Manning of Oregon Public Broadcasting reports.
Good morning.
Good morning. Eric Strid welcomes me at the door to show off improvements to his 20-year-old suburban home. He's got an ambitious goal, to make the place energy independent. That means insulating walls, replacing windows, changing out appliances, and ultimately generating a little energy on site so the house uses no electricity from the grid.
It's a guaranteed win. Energy prices are guaranteed to rise on the long term.
Jonathan Cohen is an engineer with Imagine Energy, one of Strid's contractors. He says this net zero project is extreme, but he says more and more people are investing in efficiency. Cohen feels the bad economy is bringing him customers.
They're saying, hey, I can't put my money in the stock market confidently and get any kind of return. I'm not going to sell my house or try and flip it, so I'm more concerned about putting that money long-term into my property.
So much respect. Can we have light here?
To get an idea of energy efficiency perfection, you have to go places you'd usually ignore, like the crawl space. Stefan Aguier runs Green Hammer, the general contractor that insulated the empty pockets of the home.
I mean, if they were to do nothing else to help their energy efficiency, probably spraying this crawl space was in the ducts. Work system down here is probably the best bang for the buck in the entire process.
Both of Strid's contractors say more people are interested in green remodels, but projects have smaller budgets than a year ago. Often they move more slowly. And that's even the case for determined folks like Eric Strid. He shows me on the southern side of the house mounts on the wood siding, where solar panels will go, eventually.
Oh, it's economic reality partly here, but we'll get through it.
Strid is committed to the solar panels. They would generate enough extra juice to power his next big investment, an all-electric car. In Portland, I'm Rob Manning for Marketplace.
A group called Capital Climate Action is planning an environmental rally today in Washington, D.C. The target is an old coal-fired power plant just south of the Capitol that provides electricity to Capitol Hill. Ronnie Radbill has our story.
The coalition is bringing out a heavy hitter to bolster its cause, running an ad on YouTube with actress Susan Sarandon.
The American people will take a stand at Congress's own coal-fired power plant, a glaring symbol of coal's hold over our government.
Some congressional Democrats want the Capitol power plant to switch from coal to natural gas in an effort to cut carbon emissions. But with the right technology, Joe Lucas with Clean Coal Electricity says coal can be an environmentally friendly option.
It will be necessary for us to have these technologies if we are to achieve our goal of reducing greenhouse gas emissions on a global scale.
It remains to be seen just how tough the White House will be when it comes to coal. But under the new administration, the Environmental Protection Agency recently halted approval of a coal plant in South Dakota. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
And the CEO of mortgage giant Freddie Mac is stepping down later this month. David Moffitt has been CEO since September when the government seized control of the mortgage buyer at its sibling Fannie Mae. The Dow is at 6,955. In Los Angeles, I'm Bill Radke. Have a fine Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.